हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Page 48. Gargamuni concluded, demons, asuras, cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate. Because such persons are very affectionate towards Krishna, they cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. In conclusion, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayana. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. Srila Prabhupada comments. In this verse, the word Narayana Sama is significant. Narayana has no equal. He is Asamurdva. No one is equal to him. No one is greater than he is. As stated in Shastra, Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudrari Daivatahi Samadvenaiva Viksheta Sa Pashandi Bhavet Dhruvam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 18.1.1.6. One who equates Narayana even with great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma is a Pashandi or agnostic. No one can equal Narayana. Nonetheless, Gargamuni used the word Sama, meaning equal, because he wanted to treat Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would become Nandamara's son. Gargamuni wanted to impress upon the mind of Nandamara, your worshipable deity, Narayana, is so pleased with you that he sent you a son almost equal to him in qualifications. Therefore, you may designate your son with a similar name, such as Mukunda or Madhusudana. But you must always remember that whatever you want to do, that whenever you want to do something very good, there will be many hindrances. Therefore, you should raise and protect your child with great care. If you can protect this child very cautiously, as Narayana always protects you, the child will be as good as Narayana. Gargamuni also indicated that although the child was exactly qualified like Narayana, he would enjoy more than Narayana as Rasa Vihari, the central enjoyer of the Rasa dance.
Almost equal to him in qualifications. Almost?
Well, because you have to remember, what is their Rasa? You know, I'm just saying their perspective is what? Parental, but parental in what flavor? Brad, so means sweetness. So the concept that he's God, they wouldn't be able to understand. They would say he's like God. It means you have your worshipable deity, Narayana. And because he's so pleased with your devotion, therefore you've gotten a son that's almost basically equal to him. Right? So therefore you have to, so since he's such an exalted child, you have to take care very nicely. Right? So what does that do? That brings out the parental rasa. But it doesn't obstruct the relationship of sweetness. You understand? So it has to be very carefully done, because he is a Dwarkawala, no? He's part of the Yadu dynasty. So then he has that, he sees both. But he knows here, Nanda Baba, they don't. They only see the sweetness, so therefore he presents it like that. Otherwise, if it's like Devaki and Vasudev, you say he is the Supreme Personality of Baba. Because that's how they understand it. And then it goes back and forth between seeing him as the Supreme Lord and seeing him as their son. So. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, after Gargamuni, having instructed Nanda Maharaj about Krishna, departed for his own home. Right? So in presentation, you have to present something in the way that the individual that you're dealing with actually can appreciate it according to their nature. Right? So it's part of how you discuss things. The whole idea is no truth is truth, and it goes beyond all designations and this and that, you know, whatever nice things we want to attach to it. That's very nice. But the problem is that's as far as truth. Yes, truth is pervading everywhere and there's not a problem. But the difficulty comes up is that then when we're dealing with individuals and therefore relationships and the etiquette, that's where then that philosophy breaks down. Because we have to remember, when we're basing something on truth, it's not based on dharma or religion. It's based on upadharma, on the economic development. It means if I speak straight, then this will be good for me. This is the proper thing I should do. It's good for everybody else. But who said it's good? Just I feel like it. That's why I'm doing it. If I don't feel like it, I'm not doing it. Does that make sense? So it's not based on the absolute truth on how things should be said, because Krishna says in the Gita that speech in the mode of goodness then is according to Shastra, and it's you know, how you say, digestible. Right? Passion means then you have your own agenda. So in these things, so the modern things, they all have agenda. And because they don't actually connect it to Dharma, they don't actually know the Lord, they don't understand actually how the universe works, then the basis is ignorance. Then the reason that they're doing anything is because of that touch of passion that inspires them to feel, you know, I'm inspired. That's passion. Otherwise, they just sit there in ignorance. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So that's the whole point there, as we see even in here when they're discussing amongst those from the transcendental realm, then they also discuss in a way that it doesn't disturb the sentiments of who they're dealing with. Yeah.
So another way of pushing it to the other side would be this indirect preaching. Because without disturbing the sentiments of the people, we present the philosophy in a very subtle, covered way.
But you would have to, in that presentation, you would actually have to prove that you're actually discussing the philosophy. Because if you're talking some secondary aspect of apara avidya, some astrology, some Ayurveda, some like this, how is that philosophy? Just because it happens to be, okay, for us philosophy is this Indian stuff and this other stuff is Indian stuff, so therefore this Indian stuff and the philosophy are the same. That's inappropriate logic. You know, just like I'm a devotee, therefore I do devotional service, and I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, therefore everything I do is devotional service. It's the same faulty logic. You know what I'm saying? Just because it's Ayurveda or astrology or Vastu, how is that Krishna conscious? You have to remember, even in Krishna's pastimes, right? Who was the prominent Vastu person? Right? Maya Dhanava. Right? Vishakshena was there. He built the city. But who we remember is Maya Dhanava for building the assembly hall, right? So he's a demon. So in other words, doing Vastu, doing astrology, doing all these things, that's the whole point, is it's just how the universe works. But it doesn't mean that you're theistic in your approach to that. It's the universe is so scientific that if you follow the particular patterns of this science, you will get the benefit. So a smart demon, he wants benefit, right? I mean, any demon wants benefit. But a smart demon knows, well, then I should follow the rules of the universe to get it. So they follow the universe. They follow the Shastra. They're not stupid. They don't go, oh, we're demons. We don't follow all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? They don't pull that one. So therefore, they follow all those things nicely. You know? It's just like, let's say, Hiranyakashipu is expecting things to go really nicely, right? You know, he wants, you know, things in all the seasons, you know, all the fruits and all the seasons and everything to be happening. But who does it? Right? It means that's there. But I'm saying he's captured all the planets. So what planet does he get to do what thing? The proper one. He's not going to tell the moon that, you know, he should work out, you know, his money. No, he'll tell Brihaspati to work out the money and moon to work out the trees. You know? You understand? So that's the thing. A smart person understands the science of the universe. Someone in ignorance, then they'll try to, you know, avoid it. Does that make sense? So that's the principles that soft preaching means. You may start off on some aspect, but if you don't bring it around to actually an understanding of the philosophy like that, how is it soft? So in the first meeting, you have your hour and a half, 2 hours. You should at the end have concluded about that there's a supreme controller in this. You know what I'm saying? At least that much. But if you haven't brought them to ultimately understanding this, you know, Brahman platform and the supreme Brahman, then how is it preaching? I say, no, slowly you introduce, but the whole point is then when these people join or take up Krishna consciousness, they're very attached to that secondary materialistic point, and that's how they see Krishna consciousness. So they see Krishna consciousness through the Ayurveda, through that. So it's not that they see Krishna pure devotion, and then with that we engage these. They see it through that. You know what I'm saying? They're vegans. So if you're not vegan, how can you be Krishna? How can you please God? You're not following Vastu. How is this a temple? How is this devotional service? Or you're not practicing the Ayurveda, then, you know, like this, you're not. You understand? So how is that actually preaching? Nice, you've got them to connect to Krishna consciousness like all the Hindus. Because all the Hindus talk like that. You know, they'll chant a little bit, this, that. You explain to them the importance of it. They didn't know. They'll chant. Like that. But they'll still be drinking their tea and doing all the other stuff. You know what I'm saying? So that's what you have to be very careful, is that what is going on, why it's being done. It doesn't, see, there's this illusion that soft means not talking about the philosophy, and hard means totally in your face. But the point is it's supposed to be preaching. Preaching means according to the individual's nature. Therefore, you approach, and through that medium, that's how you explain Krishna consciousness. So it's not supposed to be in your face. Right? Unless they're being in your face. You know, and then you do that, they respect you. Like I said, that one devotee's going up the steps in New York to a program, you know, and his dhoti and that, and a guy sitting on the step, typical New Yorker. He doesn't know, they don't know each other, but, you know, because they're New Yorkers, then hey. So then he walks up the stairs and he just says to the devotee, "What's with the bed sheets?" And then he turns around to him and said, "The blankets were dirty." After that, they were best friends. Because he used the medium. Like that, you know. So then, yeah, okay. So then the next question will be, okay, what are you guys doing? What's going on? Like this. Then you say, we're having kirtan, this, you want to come, it's the shop. You know, it all works. So you use the medium that they feel comfortable, but you have to discuss Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then, you know, if you find that they can't discuss Krishna consciousness, that's another thing. Then just being pleasant and nice, and they appreciating and feeling that you as a devotee is intelligent, and, you know, it looks like it's, you know, they're nice guys. Great. Then that's samyata sukriti. And then it can go farther in the future. But if there's an opportunity to, why wouldn't you take it? out of fears, oh no, but then they'll go away. But the point is, are we trying to collect volume of people? Doesn't Rupa Goswami mention that in the, what do you call it? In the 64 items of devotional service, and the second 10 things to not do is not try to collect people and money and all that. You know? So the whole point is then we're saying they'll go away, but they're not there in the first place. They're materialists. How have they become... You know, so just because we got them as an audience, but anybody can do that. You stand up on a train and start talking and all this. You have an audience, the whole bogey, at least till the next station. You know? So it's just, it's... One has to be able to define what is the thing. So, yes, you are speaking nicely, so maybe devotees were speaking rough before, but we're taking it that we're taking the roughness as bad, which is fine. You want to refine it. But we're also taking that faith in devotional service, that commitment to devotional service, and throwing that out along with it. That's what Prabhupada says, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. So they're saying, oh, we got to get rid of the roughness. But in doing so, they get rid of that commitment and philosophy. So therefore, the devotee who's preaching the soft preaching, he may have the same delicacy of faith as, or delicateness of faith as the people he's preaching to, because he doesn't want to say this because he doesn't have the faith that it's the real thing, that that's what people are looking for. He's thinking, oh, they're just looking for yoga and we'll sign trick them. No, people are looking for Krishna consciousness. And so you have to find those people. And finding those people, then you preach. Because the point is that's why you make the distinction between those who are innocent and those who are not. Innocent, you can talk these things. Like I remember in Indudunamar's program in the 90s in Poland. So this is just after, you know, they opened up the borders and everything. And so then at the program, he's asking, and they're all 98% Catholic. My God. So it's, you know, and 98% of the country is religious, practicing. Not just they say they're Catholic, they actually go to church. Right? So 98% of that 98%. Right? So it's, you know, it's quite high. So you can guarantee that basically everybody in the room is Catholic and practicing. So he says, okay, how many people here believe in reincarnation? Depending on the audience, generally 60% of the people raise their hands. So, you know, what's the point? Why are they coming there? Do they think it's... They want to know. They want their interest. You know, you yoga, so then they don't know about this and that. We take it, oh, we say Hare Krishna, they'll know we're Hare Krishna's, and the whole thing's... What's the problem? They come for yoga. It's from India. Hare Krishna's from India. What's the problem? You know, it's like saying, oh, you know, introduce, you know, the thing, you know, about that... You know, we're teaching them how to cook spaghetti, but we don't want to introduce that, you know, that we cook pizza, because then they may throw the whole thing out. It's kind of like if you're into one, why wouldn't you be the problem with the other? If you're into yoga, we're yogis. We're bhakti yogis. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that commitment, that conviction needs to be there. Then, according to your audience, then you deal nicely. You see what they can handle. Like, remember one gentleman in Calcutta, he loved Chaitanya Charitamrita. He would discuss it, he would read it, he would chant japa like this. But don't bring up vegetarian. He understands, when I come to Mayapur, you know, I'm going to come for the weekend, I'll be there those 2 days, because I'll be vegetarian. But don't take that as an opportunity to discuss being a vegetarian. He gets really bent out of shape. Because when he goes back home, it's back to, you know, his Hilsamach. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. But he loves, so therefore you just you cultivate his reading, you know, discussing philosophy and chanting. And then by that, slowly, slowly, he'll give up these other things. So that's what you see, is you see what areas are a problem. You leave that. You know what I'm saying? And then as they get there, but know what that, leaving that, that's not the standard, that particular thing. No, being careful of what they have a problem with, that's a standard. But that particular impurity with chanting will go away. Because if it doesn't, it will be an anartha. Any kind of identification will be an anartha. So even, oh, we're Westerners, that's an anartha. You're not. How do you get to the Madhyama platform with that anartha? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes. Now, in order to develop commitment or conviction, you need to have like personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada as well, right? So, yeah.
Yes, yes. Him, the devotees, means the idea Rupa Goswami says you should always associate with those who are more advanced. So therefore, then Prabhupada and the Acharyas, they're more advanced. So that's our, so therefore we read the books. We discuss the books and that. But we do that in the association of those who we feel are also serious and more advanced. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Because it seems that the devotees in the beginning they have a lot of faith in Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, yes, they
and
do.
After the faith are
But that's all, the point is understanding who the founder Acharya is. What does that mean? As Ramanuja is to the Shris, as Madhva is to the, you know, the Brahma Sampradaya, you know, Nimbarka and Vishnu Swami to the Kumara and Lakshmi, you know, and the Kumara and Rudra Sampradaya. Prabhupada is for the Gaudiyas. But we don't catch that, because if we catch that, how would you not follow what he says? How would you try to change it? Why would you try to adjust it? Does that make sense? So, That we have to be, it's not understood. You know, we've come out with Prabhupada as a founder Acharya, and yeah, and it lines up in all these books and all that, so I can accept that, yes, see, he's a great guy. But the point is there's a mood of the founder Acharya. That's what we're looking for. That's what we have to catch. So it's not just the fact, what is the implication of that? So it means, when we get to the spiritual world, then we'll be serving Prabhupada. We're going to be in his group. Well, others can say, okay, yes, he's great, he's this, and then they take so many other people from so many other places. But the point is you won't be together. They doubt that, but there's only a limited amount of room. Rupa Goswami mentions that, let's say you take, just for example, maidservants of Radharani. In one pastime, there's only 5,000 to 6,000. Does that make sense? So what does that mean? You're talking about so many people. We're going to preach, the whole world's going to be Krishna conscious. That means it's broken up into groups. So therefore, if you're focused on Prabhupada, then you'll be in that group where everyone who's focused on Prabhupada. And if Prabhupada's one of your, in the advanced devotees you appreciate, then there'll be some cooperation here and there. But it won't be the main focus. Right? Does that make sense? How can it be the main focus? So like that, in other words, there's a certain amount of individuals that are in a pastime, otherwise beyond that you can't get the flavor, the personal interaction. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's why Goloka is so big, it's 51% of the spiritual world. So that all those groups, and then when you have something like Maharas or things like that, then millions of them come together. So that means all these different groups, then they all come together for that. Otherwise, every night it's just their own group. Do you understand? Because there's no time and space, so they can be in their own area, but at the same time there's no problem in all the other areas being there, because they're all in the same place. And no time and space, so then they can all interact. So it's beyond our capacity to understand, but the point being is that one has to be very careful. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that point also. We respect all others. It's like Prabhupada is saying about those born in Brahmin families, even though they're not qualified, we still respect them because they're born in that family. There's some good karma. Why are they born there? But it's not that we would have them involved in our yajna. So in the same way, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, as all the different groups that are there, they're respected, but you wouldn't want to be involved with them. You know, if there's some greater aspect of the pastime that they can all work together and please Radha and Krishna, then yes. But otherwise, then why would we be involved with them? You know, that's where then all the, oh no, but everybody's equal and we're all that. This is mundane. Because the point is it's flavors. You're bringing out flavors. You know what I'm saying? Just like you see with the king. The king, it says, in the evening he goes into the inner, after being in the court and that, then he goes into the inner chambers. So the first thing is there's common areas in the inner chambers. Then there's the private areas. Like, so let's say he has eight queens, right? So now each queen has her own area, and then there's a common area. So if they want to interact, they can come there. They don't go into each other's area. Does that make sense? That's just the way it works. Say what you like. No, but wouldn't it be great if they all worked together and that? Only a man would say that. Right? So they come there. So when he comes there to there, all the queens will be there. Now this is the fun. He has to be able to say something to praise each of the eight queens in front of the other eight that is unique to that one, that the other ones would acknowledge that, yeah, that's hers. But at the same time, as the uniqueness has been said about each one of them, so they're satisfied that their qualities have been brought out, and they're not conflicting with anyone else. Right? And he has to do this every day for the 25 years, 30 years that he's married to them. Right? Yeah. And you can't repeat. You understand? So, that's an actuality what we're working with. So this idea, no, but everyone will be there together, just one big happy. No. You'll be there with who you have faith in. You have faith in Prabhupada, you'll be there with Prabhupada. You have faith in someone else, you'll be there with them. If you have faith with them and Prabhupada, then there'll be occasions where there will be some interaction. But it won't be the prominent. So one has to understand there is difference. Krishna is a person. The devotees are people. Not all this impersonal, oh, wouldn't it be nice we're all together? Who's we? What does all together mean? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. How many people will fit in Mother Jashoda's kitchen? You know, there's a limit. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the way it'll go. Right? Krishna goes out with 900,000 cows. He's got a limiter. Why doesn't he have 9 million or 9 billion? Because then how will you get that sweetness of interaction? Majesty, yes, but sweetness, no. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that these are the subtle points that must be appreciated. So here, Gargamuni, appreciating the mood of Nanda Baba and how that's so unique and special, therefore keeps that mood. And so he increases his love for Krishna by showing that he's something very special. At the same time as he's emphasizing how they should very carefully take care. So that's the whole point. Because if he says, no, he's God, you don't have to take care, he's taking care of you, then you have Vaikuntha. So that's the whole thing that we're trying to... We appreciate that these different moods of these devotees, they appreciate. Nard Muni, Bhishma Dev, they appreciate these other moods. They're not in those moods, but they appreciate. So that's the whole point. Yeah?
Yeah. So,
if you're attached to your spiritual master, when you're the spiritual master, the disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and you're the spiritual master, the disciple of Prabhupada together?
Means if you're attached to spiritual master, spiritual master is connected with Prabhupada,
then yes, then you're there and you're there together with that, and Prabhupada would be there. Can you be working with the spiritual master? The whole point is there, but the mood will be that of friendship. Yeah. Because the mood with all living entities in the spiritual world is friendship. There may be senior friends, junior friends, equal friends, confidential friends, but their friendship is the common.
No longer that master's
disciple. No, it's like that. It may be senior, but the point is it's different. The point you want to know, are you with that person? Yes. The other part of the rasa, try to bend your head around it. Like that. You have to be qualified to bend your head around it. You know what I'm saying?
Maharaj, here it says, but you must always remember that whenever you want to do something very good, there will be many hindrances.
Yes.
And then the part that that there are no demons in the spiritual world, how to like reconcile that?
How can we reconcile that? We've just had how many demons so far?
Three.
Yeah, so then what's the doubt?
But this is because I use it like the earthly Vrindavan, that is why there are demons here.
Yes.
But they are absent in the eternal spiritual world.
Why, the pastimes here aren't eternal also?
Yeah.
Yeah?
But then it is said that there are no demons in the eternal.
No, there's no demons in Goloka. They never use the eternal. Because when Krishna manifests his pastimes here, in Gokul, they're eternal. We may see them as manifest or not, like Lord Chaitanya is going on in his pastimes here. We may see it or not. You know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking in Jaiva Dharma. When Vrajanath and Vijay Kumar, when they went to visit the Babaji's one day, but that was the day they had decided to surrender and take initiation and all that, and they made a nice feast for the Vaishnavas. Then, by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, then they could see Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda there doing and performing their pastimes for some moments. Point is the pastimes are always going on here. They're always going on in Braj. Right? Just because somebody, you know, makes some huge building there doesn't mean that people aren't performing their regular pastimes there. Because in the regular pastimes, that building's not there. So that's the aprakrita. It means that we can't see it. Then when they're manifest pastimes, that means we're allowed to see it. It means everybody can see it. Even though you don't have spiritual senses, you can still see it. That's why the demons can see Vrindavan, see all the devotees there, see Krishna, because of that particular point. So when Krishna's pastimes are manifest, during that time anybody could see. Now, whether they, in seeing, they interpret that in connection with Krishna consciousness, they see it favorably to Krishna, they want to serve Krishna, or they just see, like the demons, he's an enemy. He's death personified. He's the, you know, most powerful yogi, or whatever it is that they see him as. So that's what was given when he went to Mathura, when he went into the wrestling arena. Then so many different people saw him differently. The Yadavas saw him as Paramatma, the wrestlers saw him as death personified, some people saw him as, you know, totally unqualified, you know, loser kids, like that. You know, the women saw him as, you know, the most attractive, you know, like this. So everybody saw him in a different way. And so that's within. Some are Krishna conscious, some are not. It's all different levels. But then in Vrindavan, it's also when he comes back with the cows and he's walking into Vrindavan, then all these different devotees are there and seeing him and interacting. And then depending upon what he does, how he does, he interacts with all of them. And in such a way that all the others don't know he's interacting. Do you understand? But there, it's all that variety is different ways of seeing within pure devotion. Well, the example in Mathura is all the variety of people from absolutely mundane or even demoniac, you know, up to, you know, pure devotion. Does that make sense? So, we have to appreciate that Gokula and Goloka are not different. It's just one is situated in the higher position, one situated in the lower position. They're not different. Okay? And so, therefore, since these pastimes go on here, you don't have to have them there, do you? Right? Means, if you cook lunch in your kitchen, you don't have to cook it again in your living room. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, since it's all the same pastimes, then those in the Goloka pastimes, they the reference of everything is to Gokul pastimes. We take it, oh no, Gokul is the thing, and then here's kind of like that. No, Goloka, all the references are to the Gokul pastimes. So that's why they think there's demons. Though they're not manifest in Goloka, but because the perception, the perspective on everything is according to the perspective in Gokula. Do you understand? So because demons come and this and that, there's that flavor. Because the gopis have husbands here, that's why there's that flavor. So you don't have to have them again there. Does that make sense? Because it's the same pastimes. Does that make sense? So that's what has to be appreciated, that the places are non-different. Otherwise, why is it special to stay in Mathura or Mayapur? Right? Because the pastimes are going on, whether we understand it or not, that's another thing. But just by staying there, we get that kind of association. And if we try to, you know, apply ourselves into our devotional service and try to avoid offenses, then we get so much benefit. Does this make sense? Yeah. So we have to understand that when it comes to these two things, there's no time and space. They're non-different, literally. Because we take it, well, there's this kind of thing here, then there's the real thing. No, they're both the real thing. All it is one's being done here, and because of the nature of the material world and they're dealing with the Tathasta Shakti, therefore you can add demons in and all kinds of stuff. Because in Goloka, where is the manifestation of the Tathasta Shakti? Right? Jivas are there, but not under the control of the Tathasta Shakti. They're in the fire of the internal potency. Right? So they're working under the Sarup Shakti. Not the Tathasta, but here it's under the Tathasta. Otherwise, how do you hold the soul, the spiritual, in a material body that's made of matter? That's Tathasta Shakti does stuff. That you can have demons in the Lord's pastimes along with the devotees. That's Tathasta Shakti. Right? Does that make sense? That you have this whole thing of Brahman and all these different things. That's the Tathasta. Right? But there, then it's not. It's not the prominent. Jivas are there, but it's all internal potency. So that's why it said it's non-different. That's why we use the example of iron and fire. Jivas will eternally be jivas, but in the fire of the internal potency, they're as good as internal potency. No one makes the distinction. No one, you don't have, you know, segregation or anything, I say. Does that make sense? So no one makes a distinction between those who are jivas and those who are internal potency. And then within that, no one makes it seem, oh, this is Ladini, this is Sambit, Sandini. There's no distinction there. Does that make sense? So that's the whole. But even though no distinction is made, everybody performs their duties according to their nature. So, yeah.
Much about the earlier discussion about soft preaching, those who are like doing it, they have found some cracks in what you have just explained to us. They say that, yeah, sure, we'll bring them using vegan, vegetarian, astro, vastu, and we have this huge, you know, pandal program thing. We have these astro stuff, all these things, and there's a person doing fire and juggling and all these things to attract them. At the same time, in that big pandal pavilion thing, we have some booths where we give pure Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, and if the person doesn't go there? So then you're leaving it up to their Sukriti to come there, not your Sukriti to give it to them. That's the difference. Krishna only reciprocates according to that. So you've taken part a little bit. And that's if they have a big program in Pandal. Is that how most of the soft preaching goes on? No. So then how is that a crap?
Then in that pure booths, they explain to them that all of that, what you just saw, is nonsense, and this is what we're doing is pure.
Right. That's nice. Maybe who does that? Because I haven't. Most of the people I've heard of doing self-preaching never do that.
So this one is good. This idea seems like a good thing.
You know, yeah. But the point is it's not that it's nonsense. You have to understand what is this connection to Krishna. Everything connects to Krishna. You have to know how. So yes, you could say that's better than others. But I know others, they have yoga studios. People come in, they sit there, they do their meditation and this and that, and you know, to get everybody in the right mood, then they start the discussion, then they have kirtan, and then more discussion at the end. They understand this maha mantra, you know, Krishna and everything like that. So after the 2 hours, they're all chanting Hare Krishna, and they make lots of devotees. You know, they maintain a little attachment to yoga and stuff like that, you know, but you know, with time they start giving that up, because the people who are preaching it, I don't think they do yoga at all. They're not into yoga at all. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? So, the whole point is they just know that this is what people are into now. Like before, hippies, you just talk hippie stuff and people came. But, you know, as soon as they come, then you shave off the hair. Now, if there's anything that's important to a hippie, it's their hair. They may be vegetarian, not vegetarian. They may be in between. They may be this and that, and yoga and this and that. But there's one thing in common. They all got hair. Right? And so that was Prabhupada's first thing. You want to join? Shave the head. You shave, then you can move into the temple. No shave, no moving into the temple. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is, it's you have to make it at some point obvious. So if they can do that and they find that it works, and they're able to get devotees who are very serious and Krishna conscious and can appreciate pure devotion, and they may have attachment to these things, that's why they're attracted, and then by practicing devotional service they give up their attachment, though they may still use these things for Krishna, that's fine. But what I'm talking about is people who they preach, they become vegan, you know, they use the vegan, they become, you know, devotees, and then they shut down vegetarians in the temple and make the temple vegan, and Krishna doesn't get any dairy products. That's what I'm talking about. Or people that are into Ayurveda and into things like that, and that's totally what they're into. They don't want to discuss other things. You know, they're devotees, they'll chant and this and that, but the prominent consciousness of these things. That's what we're talking about. Or yoga studios where, you know, you go there, don't talk about Krishna, don't do this and that and everything like that. And like, well, how long has this program been going on? Oh, this is the 7th week.
Yes.
You know, then it's kind of like, well, then where are you going with this? Oh, if we say anything, they'll go away. But the point is you're supposed to... separate the grain from the chaff. So the whole point is it's a matter, what preaching means, we're going out and exposing Krishna consciousness to the general public. Then from that, everybody that it gets exposed to it is getting a jnana sukriti. Right? Everybody. Now, from amongst those who have gotten a jnana sukriti in the past from such exposures in previous lifetimes, then those who the volume of it's come up to a particular point that when we expose them, then now it becomes critical mass where then they develop faith, then they're ready. But the point is, if you don't throw it out to everybody and what it is, how do you get that to come to the point of faith? And all those others that don't come, it's not that there's any loss. They've heard the holy name, they've tasted prasad, they've heard the philosophy. Right? So that Ajñāta Sukriti is there, it's eternal. Now if they then finding out, oh, this is religious, and then they go away, that's because they don't have enough Sukriti. It's not that, oh, but they're intelligent people, this, it has nothing to do with intelligence. That's another disease. We're so attached that I'm intelligent, I'm educated, I'm up to date, I'm liberal, I'm broad-minded, I'm this, I'm that, I'm, and of course the main thing is I'm Westerner. right? Even though I'm not a Westerner, because how do you define a Westerner? Where's West? You know, because we have to remember, South America is totally east of America, right? Means like, what is it, you know, the Peru, the capital of Peru, that's east of, you know, New York. So, they're Easterners. But if you're counting European as Westerners, then they're in between the two, so that way they're Westerners. You know what I'm saying? So, how you define it? Because generally when they say Westerners, we mean America, Europe, like that. We don't mean South. We just don't mean that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It's not meant. Because if you count them, you have to count Africa. So we're going to say they're Westerners? No. You don't want to do that. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is how do they judge? So it's simply those who, what we want to say is those who are coming from a background where externally we follow Christian values as a social as a common economic social structure, that's Westerners. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we want. And since we're that, we don't want to accept any other culture. But, of course, within that Christian thing, if you're dealing with those who are not so fanatic and all that, you can be other religions as long as you accept and work according to that Protestant Christian environment. Yeah, because you can't even be Catholic or other things like that, because it gets a little too weird. It has to be that Protestant kind of thing. Because Protestant means anybody can do anything. Catholic means you have to follow the authorities. East Orthodox means you have to follow the authorities. You have acharyas, you have gurus, you have to follow them. Protestant means everybody has, they can all connect with God. Everybody can, so it's like a sahaja kind of thing. You're like that. You don't need acharyas, you don't need books, you don't need any of this kind. It's just all Bob, right? You know, that's what's going on in Bengal, you know? The Buddhists worked that out, Sahajayan Buddhism, that's where it's from. You know what I'm saying? It's so that kind of thing. And Buddhism is atheistic, it's impersonal. So that's why it works for everybody. Well, if you take, you know, more of a Catholic kind of thing, more of a Jewish kind, then it doesn't work for everybody. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. So it's not according to that. It's according to the lifestyle. Is that what I'm saying? So we have to be very careful, because that's also left in the process. We say, oh, we're connected to all these things, but then they're also connected to all those other things. And those other things don't actually have a good origin. Because technically, Christians, Jews, Islam, they're all by dedication mediators. You know, being that means Christians to some degree, they'll allow it, but technically you're not supposed to be. Jews, definitely not. Muslims, definitely not. They're into alcohol, right? All the best alcohol is made by priests. They're the ones that came up. Who else? Can the farmer come up with champagne? No, he's too busy, right? Having to plow. The priests, they got nothing to do, right? It means they do their studies, they're sodomists, but they have time. So they can come up with champagne. They can come up with, you know, all these, you know, different names and all that, you know. Does that make sense? They can come up with that. So that's where it comes from. So all these things, it's based in that. So when you say we're this, then we're attached to something that you can engage it in Krishna service, but at some point you have to understand is that, yes, you can engage it, but sometimes it's given up. You know, like devotees might go into the graveyards and steal flowers, or go to people's houses and steal flowers. They'll offer them to Krishna so that they've connected it to Krishna. It makes it perfect. Right? But at the same time, there's that mentality of stealing. Right? Because why are they stealing? It's just for Krishna, you know, unless we do the, you know, it's God's will, and, you know, the heathens have all the flowers, and so now for the righteous people will go and take them back. And I mean, you can try that one, but it didn't work out so good in the, you know, in the Crusades, you know, like that. But the whole point is that everything belongs to God. But What we're missing is God has given everyone their quota. So those roses in the front of that old lady's house, that's her quota. Now what she wants to do with them, that's her call. So it's not our business to go in there, no, but we're liberating the flowers for Krishna. You know how you say the, the Lotus Liberation Front, you know, liberate all the flowers from these, you know, how you say, yeah, you know, the lines. So the whole point is that that's her quota. So now that we've taken them and offered them to Krishna, then it's perfect because it's Krishna's being there. But there is a weakness because that lady, even though she grew them, she'll get some benefit like that. But the point is what about the thing of just going to her and asking that, you know, we're doing this, can we have some flowers in the morning? And she'll say, yeah, take how much you want, or leave some because I, you know, use some for this, or today I'm having friends over, you can't take, or like that. They're her flowers. You know what I'm saying? By Krishna's given her quota. So if you do that, then that works it all out. So the whole point is that part, the stealing part, that's just because of our nature that, you know, stealing is better. You know, if it's stolen, it tastes better, or it looks better. Or, you know what I'm saying? So that's just due to impurity. So at some point, that has to be given up. So you start off with, yes, we're Westerners, we follow this culture, we eat this, we do that, we all so many things because we are we, right? You know, like that. So that's okay in the beginning because you've connected to Krishna, it's getting purified, it becomes perfect. But at the same time, there's more perfect. In other words, you know, doing things that Krishna would like. Because then you say, no, more perfect is just having more devotion. But at some point, does Krishna want you to steal the flowers? No. So the point is you could be engaging those flowers and the persons that they belong to. Does that make sense? So that way, then, that gets more benefit. So if we have more love for Krishna, then we start to bring our life in line with the activities that are recommended, you know, when possible. Does that make sense? But like Manu mentions, that when it's not possible for the dvijas to perform their duties, they can do alternative work, like that. And even anybody, shudras may do other work, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that if the opportunity is not there, but it's one of the duties of the king, that when the opportunity is there to again do your appropriate duty and you don't want to do it, then you're redefined. So if a Brahmin has taken up, let's say, business, and now he could go back to his brahminical, the culture's there, the pizza's there, everything's there, the opportunity is there, but he actually prefers being the Vaishya because of the benefit, you know, it's more income, more facility, bigger house, bigger this and that, then he has to redefine himself. He's not a Brahmin anymore. Now he's a Vaishya. So in the same way is that, yes, we may start off in our consciousness, we don't know in all this and that, that we are engaged in devotional service and we are engaging our lifestyle as we know it in Krishna's service. And we'll just say this is a nice devotee, they're sincere, they're advancing and all that. But if they maintain that thing that, no, we're Westerners, this is the way we should do it, this is the better way, in fact, it's the superior way, in fact, it's the universal way, that at that time, then, according to the law of Manu, they have to redefine themselves and say, I'm a beginning neophyte devotee with a serious anartha that I think I'm this body and the place where I'm born is sacred. Just like the Bhagavatam verse says. Right? So then that has to be done. You can't try to make it honest, try to make it equal to pure devotional service. So the point is, this word soft preaching is a misnomer. No, you're supposed to preach. My point is the terms hard preaching, soft preaching, they're only useful in using when you're pointing out the weaknesses of actual preaching. If you're preaching, you have that faith and that, but you're not considering the person you're preaching to, then you call that hard preaching. But actually, preaching, you're supposed to consider the person. And soft preaching is that you're considering the person, but you're considering the persons more than you are the soul. You're considering the conditioning, right? In other words, the one only considers the soul. You're not the body or the soul, so therefore, you know, don't be so attached. That's hard preaching. And you are the conditioning, and so we don't want to disturb that. They don't see the soul. That's soft preaching. So preaching is where you balance that. So you see, those who are preaching, they make devotees. Those devotees go on, understand the importance of pure devotion. That's proper preaching. Right? To that degree, it's one way or the other. That's not. But that's because this preaching's not being done properly. You can't blame the preaching. You can't say, oh, before we did this. Yeah, but before you weren't as mature. But being mature is not being modern. Being mature is being Krishna conscious. That's the maturity. Because otherwise, skills develop with age. And if we just go, I'm better at the skill, we're older, that's a Shudra's position of respect. You know, a 90-year-old carpenter is respected more than a 20-year-old because he's got, you know, 80 years of experience. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. But in the Vedic standard is you have the 90-year-old Kshatriya, because it says in Manu that anybody who's 90 years old is respected by everybody. Even if he's a Shudra, he's 90 years old, everybody gives him respect. Right? Just because they see things in a different kind of light. Right? So, but still, you have a Kshatriya who's 90 and a Brahmin who's 10. Then the Brahmin is the senior. They're like father and son. So the Brahmin may refer to the Kshatriya as my son. So that's the actual point. We don't like that because in the Malecha culture, respect only goes one way. And, you know, basically who has money, power, whatever is popular at the time and whatever group you're in, right? In other words, if you're successful in the world, then it's going to be those things, money, power, position, influence, like that. If you're not successful in the world, then it's going to be, I'm just down to earth. Oh, I'm, you know, we're, you know, intellectual. Oh, we're just, you know, how you say, yeah, we're just broad-minded. Yeah, like this. Or, you know, there's different things that they use, but mainly those are the ones that aren't successful. Like that. But the methods, that means, yeah, in some extent. So one has to be able to discern what we're talking about in this. So the point is, if somebody's able to successfully preach and all that, and if by having, you know, jugglers there juggling fire gets people in the door, why not? But the point is if you don't give them Krishna consciousness, then what's the point? Then open a circus and then use that money for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Maharaj, what I've understood of what you have said is that there is, using dharma, we preach Krishna consciousness, and there are others who are not using dharma and they're preaching Krishna consciousness. Like all these soft preaching methods. And what you have said is that use scriptures, use the psychology, the science psychology of the scripture, understand this person, and then preach according to that. That's perfect. But yes. What they argue is that, your dharmic preaching, you have not produced the money, the buildings, the people, as we have produced using our
dharma. But have they? Where is that money? And there was more money back in the late 70s, early 80s than take in one zone that you take the whole world now of Krishna consciousness with 600 temples that they don't even compare. So that's a bogus argument. They're straight, hard preaching that they're against. They made the most devotees. I remember one devotee had so much, because they appreciate the straightforwardness, the honesty of it, that you are who you are, say you are, and everything like that. And even though it may not be what you know, pleasant, people appreciate that. So now, if you can behave as a gentleman and talk a little bit nicely, why wouldn't they like it? Because what has to be understood is you have to be a bit of a xenophobe to think that the common person has a problem with religious people like priests and monks wearing outfits that are different than them. Right? For the Jews, the religious people, they wear different clothes. For the Christians, then those who are, they wear different clothes. For the Muslims, they wear different clothes. For the Buddhists, they wear different clothes. The Jains, they wear different clothes. Right? Sikhs, they kind of all wear the same, but some will be a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, they all wear different clothes. You know what I'm saying? So where, why would one take the basis that people can't tolerate that religious people wear different clothes? You know, and that they would talk about religion. It's like, where is this so-called modern intellectual broad-mindedness? I see completely narrow-minded people. They claim that they're broad-minded, but they're extremely narrow. And because they say it with attitude and arrogance and use a little bit of so-called logic, then you know, everybody's supposed to step back because, you know, they pull the, you know, then you're not broad-minded. You know, they pull these sentimental cards. You know what I'm saying? And expect that their authority will be established by these. You understand? But it's not. It's totally based on a narrow-minded platform. Because if you can't accommodate other cultures, then what does that make you? Right? Because that's the whole thing. Is even you're dealing with Western, how many wide of a range do you have to deal with? Right? You know, Americans are different than the Brits, are different from the French, are different from the Germans, are different from the Italians. You know what I'm saying? You know, everybody likes pasta. It's Italian. How many people are Italian? Right? Name me how many people are Italian in Brazil. Right? It's the most favorite food in there. Right? Does that make sense? The Brits, the favorite food is curry. Where is that from?
India.
And then we're saying, oh, we can't eat this? And they eat it hot. You know, they don't like it not hot. They like it hot. You know what I'm saying? And most Americans, when they eat Mexican, they eat it hot. You know what I'm saying? And then all this, oh, we can't eat all these foreign foods and all this chili and all this spice. It's not us. We're Americans. So what background are they from? They've never tasted anything from any other cuisine, any other culture, anything. They can't deal with anybody who's dressed different than them. They can't deal with anybody who talks different than them. So how is this broad-minded? How is this intellectual? You know what I'm saying? What university did they go to? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is that that's the whole idea. You're supposed to broaden and accommodate and all this. So we can accommodate everywhere in the world, as I made the example before. Now let's say if we're in one of these so-called Western countries where people are Western and we are Western and be Western by Western, right? You know, like that. That's a popular, right? Isn't that, that's how, what was the saying? Be Western by Western? Right. Yes. Okay. So then, in this, would they eat Chinese food? Yes. What about Vietnamese food?
Yes.
Thai food? What about maybe Indonesian?
Yeah.
You know, Bali? Okay, let's say Australia. Right? I'm not sure what that means. Maybe some kangaroo burger or... what is it? Platypus pate, or something. Yeah, you know, but whatever it is, kiwi crisps. I wouldn't know what it is, but whatever it is.
Something with Marmite.
Marmite, yes. Okay, there it is. Marmite. Okay, now let us say, what about Middle Eastern? Could we eat Lebanese food, or you know, some Jewish stuff, or like that? Okay, what about Italian, Spanish? You know, okay, French. Like that, you know. German doesn't have a lot, but a lot of the cheeses are from there, come like that. English, we might appreciate the crumpets and stuff, or the curry, but most things, yeah, not, okay? Now, Let us, okay, now what about south of the border there? What about, Mexican and all those? Some of those things we could eat, no? Like that quinoa comes from all the way down south. That's like, I think it was the Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, that's their food. Like that, you know, so then, you know, that's their, you know, how you say, they like the cocaine from there also. You know, Afghanistan, they like the, the poppy seed, the heroin, you know. But, you know, I mean, so people take stuff from all over the place. You know, if we came out, we're Swedish. I remember as a kid, yogurt was the thing from Sweden. I was shocked later that, you know, they got it from somewhere else, you know, because, you know, it's too cold up there, so they had to figure it out, right? You know, it actually comes from the Middle East and all that. So probably when the Vikings, you know, went down to the Middle East, because they did go down there, then, you know, they probably picked up some yogurt and brought it back, right? So, you know, along with discovering America, right? So,
we have
like,
it in Denmark.
Sorry?
We have it in Denmark.
Yes.
In Europe.
Yes, yes.
From the
town. Yes, yes. So like that, and then Hawaiian stuff, a couple of things, you might try it out, you know, Japanese, okay, you know, like that, sushi, you know, works, you know what I'm saying, you understand? So that's the whole point. We've covered every place in the world. Do we notice one place missing?
India.
Why is it that we can't eat that food, but we can eat everything else? And they all use the spices. The Thai uses spices and things like that. Chinese, depending on where it is, it uses the Middle Eastern, like this. So if you cook from farther down south in Italy, they use chili. So anytime it's hotter, they use chili. When it's colder, they use, you know. You understand? So the whole point, we could eat food from any place but India. We could wear clothes from any place but India. We could have any identity from any place but India. So now, are we seeing a pattern here? So it's not just we're Westerners. No, we're against the Vedic culture. Because all these other cultures, we can relate to them because they're not Vedic. And therefore, then this whole speculative lifestyle, because that's the difference. Vedic means it's on the authority of Shastra. Non-Vedic means it's speculation. It may have its history, it may have its tradition, but all those traditions, every one of them is a speculation. Or it comes originally from the Vedic. It's just what's left over. But their interpretation of the application, and much of that you throw it anyway with time. If it gets in the way with the speculative process, you throw it out, and if you're okay with it, you keep it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that this idea that, you know, we're Westerners, we can't do all that. What do you mean? What happened to the global village? You know, because the broad-minded people and educated, they talk about the global village, the world with no borders, doctors with no borders, you know, how you say, all this kind of jazz, you know. You know, the guy's wife's Russian or Middle Eastern or, you know, this or that or, you know, wherever they were in you know, wherever they were in the military, wherever they were deployed, then they might, you know, pick up somebody from there and come back, and you know what I'm saying? So this whole thing is that America is a melting pot from everywhere in the world, but India is not allowed, even though they're doing fabulous there. You know what I'm saying? Probably per individual, per capita, they're doing as well or better than anybody. Probably the ones that are doing, you know, does that make sense? So that's the fun part, is that you say, oh, you can't follow that here. They're following it. The cultural, maybe not the philosophy, but the culture of it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Is that it's just an anti-Vedic sentiment. It doesn't have any other substance. Otherwise, you can say, "Oh, we're from here," but then if you're from there, then people in South America, then you'd have them. You know, they'd be wearing in Ecuador. They should be wearing their bowlers. You know what I'm saying? It's an English hat, but somehow or another they like it, and that's what they wear. You know what I'm saying? So that's what they should be doing. Then they should put on their cowboy hats, or, you know, whatever it is the local thing that they're doing. But the whole point is it's regional. It's not universal. It's trying to be said it's universal. It's not. It may be very popular for sense gratification, but as far as for progressive life and spiritual life, it's not at all. So therefore, if you're interested in spiritual life, you would be wanting to control the sense gratification. There is no control of sense gratification in the modern culture. Right? The only control is coming from some religious process. So therefore, why would you want to use one of these other religious processes when you can use the Vedic? You know, since it's given by Krishna, it's what he practices. So in other words, if you like somebody, why you wouldn't want to do what they do? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't make any sense at all. So all they can see is underlining is there's an attachment to the their own lifestyle they grew up in and an aversion to what's different. Does that make sense? So all this trying to make it look like his philosophy, all they're doing is arguing, you know, Upadharma at best. Upadharma, Chaladharma, Vidharma, much of the Dharma. So just all these things that Bhagavatam rejects. Does that make sense? So it's not that, no, they haven't found cracks in it. Because we're just saying, because Prabhupada mentions that. You know. The Western culture itself, those who are intellectual want to bring it down. Right? They're ones that always fight against it and bring down all this and that. But they bring it down to maintain sense gratification they want. So this whole thing of maintaining attachment to, but the attachment to what? And what mix? You know, saying we're being broad-minded at the same time we're trying to be a bit upbeat. But the point is the guy, I mean, he's not upbeat, a bit, let's say you're going dress casual. The guys who are dressed casual, are they the ones that are broad-minded? Are they the liberal ones? Or the ones that see everybody equally? No, they're the ones that, you know, you're not dressed casual. They won't even talk to you. No? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is you have to be very, very careful in this, is that it has a mix of things that don't make sense. Like that. Mm. Yes.
And we just had a Rath Yatra last year, and I was taking some pictures, and then these Krishna-based people, one of them, he pointed out that this is only for the Indians, and then I pointed out, please look carefully at the pictures, at the photos in the newspaper, because obviously there were quite a few Indians, but they were, half of them were white.
Yeah, yeah.
So like
they say that, but you also have to tell the Krishna West person that wearing shorts and a t-shirt is for Southern California. It's not for Denmark. So then why are they here? They should all pack up and leave. Because even in Northern California, San Francisco, you wouldn't wear that. You know, you have to be kind of like, you know, from Pasadena and those areas. You know, L.A. down to, you know, basically San Diego up to, you know, the Great Sur. You know, and even south of the Great Sur. So anything there and west of the, you know, the mountains there, because, you know, it's cold up there. So you have to be just on the coast there, you know. In other words, if you drive and you see cement, then you should be wearing your shorts and t-shirts. But if you see mountains, hills, or, you know, anything else, then you shouldn't be wearing that. It's very regionalized. And so then why are they trying to present that they are the representative of the West? And this is only for Indians. So they're anti-Indian? What's wrong with Indians? You know? So if you're anti-Indian, wouldn't you call that xenophobic? Isn't that narrow-minded? And then they're trying to present that we're the broad-minded people? So all it is just another thing like that. Just the same mistake that, you know, the Catholics make with others and the Protestants, and everybody tries to kill each other. You know, the Christians with the Jews, you know, the Muslims. It's just it all is what I'm doing. That's the real universal thing. What the point is the only universal thing is Krishna consciousness. You can say, no, but that's India. No, the whole universe follows it. All 14 planetary systems follow the Vedic culture. So the only place that has an option that they may or may not is this part here. As we said, is one part, is a ninth, no, it's an 81th of Jambudvipa. And Jambudeep is 1/7, and it's the smallest part of the whole Bhu Mandala. And then all the other planets above and below, they all follow the Vedic culture. You know, so therefore it is universal, literally. As we say here, universal, you know, like he's Mr. Universe or Miss Universe. It's like, they're not. You know, one of the apsaras came down, no one would look at Miss Universe. You know. You know, Arjuna came along, who's going to look at, you know, all these other guys? You know, nobody's going to care. Brad who? You know, it's like, you know, nobody's going to care. You know, it's like, you know, it's just Arjuna, right? You know, it's like, you know, in the Mahabharata, who do all the girls like? Arjuna, right? I mean, Yudhishthira is great, Bhima is so strong, Nakul and Sahadeva are, you know, cute, but everyone likes Arjuna, right? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's the standard. And those who are so narrow-minded and have such a non-eclectic upbringing that they have not contacted anything outside of their own place, like that. You know, so we do see that. You know, and so then what are you going to do? You're going to remove all these things. And so then if we want to continue the thing, you know, which is not very palatable, then if you take this into extreme, then you have those who are in power, then they try to remove anybody who's from that. Right? So either you have, you know, how you say, you end up with ghettos and work camps, or you end up with just straight cleansing, you know, without, you know, I mean, it's much more efficient, right? You know, you have to ship them somewhere, this, that. You just go into where they are, just clean them right out. And then, you know, nice. Now just the appropriate, you know, higher class people and culture now just move in. But that's what they did. Christians go in, savages, kill them all, take their land. You know, this is, so if you want to take that as a universal principle, hey, go for it. But if you want to bring out philosophy and stuff like that, and we're not the body, and, you know, we're talking about the spiritual and pleasing Krishna, then we don't even have a position to start from. Because if the first thing is, this is all Indian, then either they need to redefine what Indian is, or understand Krishna is also Indian. Right. You know, so it's not a good position. It's not in any way, shape, or form a spiritual or philosophical position. It's just narrow-mindedness. It's xenophobia. We try to present it as something, but what the Europeans that landed in America, what do they present it as? Something religious, you know. These are all savages, so therefore all this land, you know, should belong to God. It already belongs to God. Right? So then they just kill everybody and they're happy. And everywhere they went, that's all they did. And then we're supposed to take this as the superior culture, the universal culture, the culture that other than themselves, every other culture on the planet does not like. Literally, every culture has a name for these people. Right? Even in fact, if you're from there, they have a name. You're a WASP, right? White, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant. And they are the totally most intolerant people on the planet. You know? They've proven themselves in that way. Individuals, of course, there's always going to be some difference and uniqueness in them than they're from, you know. Does that make sense? So this whole thing is this, it's not a philosophical position. So that's the sadness, is that it's being presented as if it's an actual philosophy. Prabhupada already made a society. We don't need another one. You know, so if you want to propagate what Prabhupada gave, we have the society. We have the mission. If your goal is something else, to maintain material attachment, then hey, then yes, but then let it be known that that's what it is. You know? And if they like, we can, you know, Ratha Yatra make little armbands for all the Indians that come, you know. Like that. Okay, stop here.
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama.